If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm here to tell you that I have experienced an intervention in my life by the divine, and that God's desire is for every sentient being in the cosmos to self-realize. And it's God's greatest desire for all of life. But would God talk to an average person? Can we all have such conversations? And if we can all have such conversations, what would it take? Pain and suffering offers us an opportunity to do what we came to the physical world to do, to express and fulfill who we really are. I believe that we are all invited to continue the journey of the soul, lifetime to lifetime to lifetime. The purpose of life is to evolve, to become grander and grander expressions of who we really are, divinity itself. I could, of course, be wrong about all of this, but I don't think so.
Welcome to the Inspired Evolution. I'm your humble host, Amrit Sandhu, and you're tuning in to a conscious conversation designed to help you grow. Our mission here is simple. It's for you to live your purpose, live your best life, live the life you love. This podcast is sponsored by Enthusiasm for Life, by Great Creation itself. To keep the good vibes flowing for myself and yourself, do us a solid, subscribe to the Inspired Evolution podcast on YouTube, the home of the Inspired Evolution podcast. Now sit back, relax, open your mind, open your heart to this conversation and stay inspired. Keep evolving.
Well, the first thing I say to them, Amrit, is thank you for your opinion. I honor your point of view. I have no need to denigrate your point of view or make you wrong. We simply have different ideas on this topic. It happens to be my understanding that God talks to all of us all the time. I'm not the only person to whom God is speaking, but that God is speaking to everyone in 1,000 different moments across 100 lifetimes. But most people don't call it that when they receive those kinds of inspirations, or when they feel that God has entered their lives in an important way, you know, with some kind of an idea or thought. They call it something else so they can get away with it. They call it maybe women's intuition, or they might call it an epiphany, or a sudden insight, or, you know, this morning I had a brilliant idea, whatever they want to call it, because that allows them to describe the experience they're having of receiving information from, you know, what appears to be another source that's something you hadn't thought of before. And not having to say that it came to them directly from God. So the only difference between all those people and myself is that I have said, I've called it what it is, at least what I experience it as being. I've received those brilliant insights, those wonderful ideas from God directly. And I think we all are receiving it from God directly. As I said, we're simply giving it a different name so that we don't get ridiculed or marginalized. So what I say to those people who tell me that I'm a blasphemer is, well, thank you for your point of view. I'm not sure that I can share your idea, but I appreciate your having the courage to share your truth with me. And as long as we can disagree agreeably and not, you know, be verbally or physically violent with each other, we will always get along well.
The book you've written is, In God Talk, it's written, obviously there's a very divine connection that it's espousing and inspiring. Yet, upon reading it, I felt this sense of urgency. There's a sense of importance, like the matter is nigh, it's at hand, it's important now that we all learn how to, I don't want to say master this skill, but start to connect is probably the right way to put it. Develop a dialogue with God is exactly how we should probably put it. Why do you think it's so important that, particularly now in this time, that we start to develop a dialogue with God for each and every one of us?
Well, because nothing in this world is working. The world is falling apart. You know, we've put together many systems to try to make the world work. We put together political systems, economic systems, social systems, spiritual systems. But none of the systems that we've put together have actually produced the outcomes for which they were designed. For instance, the political system was designed in the hopes of bringing people and nations closer together. And even though they might have political differences, but, you know, to bring them closer together in a cooperative venture called human life. But in fact, our political systems have done exactly the opposite. They've not brought us closer together. They've pushed us further apart. And recently, political systems have even become, at least in the United States, and also in other parts of the world as well, Myanmar is a perfect example. Political systems have become, in some cases, verbally violent and abusive and insulting, and in other cases, actually physically violent. So those systems have produced exactly the opposite outcome for which they were designed. Our economic systems, Amrit, were designed to hopefully provide at least equal opportunity, maybe we couldn't guarantee equal outcomes, but we certainly hope to provide equal opportunity economically for people to, you know, do well in their life and feel financially secure. But our economic systems have, in fact, not produced that outcome. They have produced exactly the opposite. With five people in the world holding more wealth and resources than half of the world's population combined. And with people in some countries so poor and so without financial resources that they haven't had one drop of pure water in their entire lives. And we have 653 children, this is an actual statistic, by the way, 653 children dying on this planet of starvation every hour. Not every day, not every week, not every month, not every year. Every hour, because of rampant poverty. We can't even get food to starving children. And so our economic systems are clearly not working to produce the outcome for which they were designed. Our social systems were produced in the hopes of bringing people of different races, different colors, different religions, different economic status, different sexual orientations, and different points of view about life to bring us closer together. Those systems have produced exactly the opposite outcome. Rampant verbal insults and violence, and a sense of alienation between people in those groups, a higher experience of alienation than I have ever seen in my 80 years on this planet. And finally, our religious systems, originally designed to bring us closer to God and hopefully therefore closer to each other, have produced exactly the opposite outcome. More wars have been created and produced on this planet in the name of God than for any other single reason. We've had violence on the earth for all but 5% of recorded history because we can't even agree on our religious experience. We can't find a way to, as I said earlier, to disagree agreeably. So we call each other names. We even condemn each other to everlasting damnation because some religions say that if you belong to another religion, you're going straight to hell. So now, when we have every system you can imagine, religious systems, social systems, economic systems, and political systems, dysfunctional, that would be the answer to your question. Why is it important for us to have some kind of experience with a higher power? You know what's interesting, Amrit? Sociologists have taken surveys in the past 10 years around the country, I should say around the world, actually. In most of the countries of the world, they've gone to people in the street. Sociologists have taken a survey, scientific survey, asking one question. It was a one-question survey. Do you believe in a higher power? Amrit, 8.5, statistically speaking, out of 10 people. 85% of the people who were asked said yes. They believe in a higher power. So we have massive agreement that there's more going on here than meets the eye. We simply can't agree on what that is and what that higher power wants and what God requires of us and what happens if we don't give what we imagine that God requires. And those disagreements, as I mentioned a moment ago, have created actually violence and war on this planet for all but 5% of recorded history. So I think it's important, and I think it's obviously why it's important. If humanity wishes to survive itself, it's important for us to get in touch with our natural connection to a higher power and to see what we can be invited to remember about the purpose of life, about who we are, about why we're really here on this planet, and what our opportunities are that lie ahead should we choose to engage in the evolutionary process in a conscious rather than an unconscious way. That would be my long-winded answer to your one-sentence question.
If you are loving this conversation, please don't forget to give the video a thumbs up and leave a comment below what you're taking away from the episode. And as always, please do take the time hit the button, subscribe down below. It really helps what we're doing here, grow the channel and grow basically awareness and consciousness and promoting positivity and solid awareness around the world. So please do take a moment to subscribe. It really helps everything we're trying to do here. Back to today's episode. Thank you in advance. And one of the connotations, that there was many threads in there, but one of the connotations was this sort of intermediary effect that we've put between ourselves and higher power, whether it's through religion, whether it's even through politics, whether even through social structures. We've sort of, the way I would articulate it is, given up our sovereignty in some ways and sort of handed over power to these intermediary structures to try and support us, to help us organize, control, however things are being orchestrated. And what I'm hearing is the time is nigh that we can identify that these structures are not serving the way that they were designed to serve. Let's put it that way, to put it succinctly. And then therefore there's a coming back home to the individual finding their own empowerment, and in that empowerment connecting directly to a higher power. Is that safe to say?
Yes, but not only individuals finding their own empowerment, individuals finding that the source of their empowerment is the fact that they're not separate from any other individuals. That individuality and separation are not the same thing. We are all individuals, but we are also all connected, irrevocably connected, profoundly connected, or as Conversations with God put it in a single sentence, Neil, we are all one. All things are one thing. There is only one thing, and all things are part of the one thing there is. So our individual empowerment is hopefully bringing us to a place of individual clarity, that individualism does not mean separation, that we are individual, even as the fingers of my hand are individual, each looking differently and having different functions entirely. But while they're individual, they're not separate from each other. So I want to offer you as a metaphor that we are all fingers on the hands of God.
The individual experience can be so fraught sometimes, not all the times, definitely not all the times, but sometimes with such deep pain and suffering. And it does beg the question, if we are all one and interconnected, as we are interconnected, as one, the role and purpose of pain and suffering in the experience of one's life. Can you speak to that?
I don't think that it has a purpose in the sense that we often use the word, but there's a way that we can function in the presence of pain and suffering. Pain and suffering offers us an opportunity to do what we came to the physical world to do in a powerful and extraordinary way. Pain and suffering provides us with an opportunity to announce and declare, to express and fulfill, to demonstrate and to experience who we really are. That we are each, in fact, demonstrations, individuations of divinity. And once we embrace our true identity as individuations of divinity, we then see that which is painful and sad as really an invitation from life to life itself, providing us with an opportunity to experience who we really are in the space of those kinds of unwelcome experiences. when we use those experiences in that way, we wind up actually blessing them. And even the people who provide them.
I found it really remarkable when I started studying the word blessing, and the etymology of the word is from a French word, I think, which is blessure, which actually means to blemish, which actually means wounded. And it's quite profound to recognize that blessings, you know, also have that original connotation of the wound in there as well. And I think
I don't think that it means a blemish in any way. I think that it's simply it might have been the derivation of the word. It might be where the word began. But many words that began in one way came to mean something entirely different. So I think it would be inaccurate for us to come to the conclusion that because that may be the derivation of the word, maybe the word blessing came from the French word for blemish. That doesn't mean that that's what the word blessing was intended to connote or to communicate to human beings, but in fact, just the opposite. A blessing is not a blemish. It's a blessing. It's just the opposite.
Thank you. And this particular juncture where identifying the individuals suffering in the role of that, and then we're talking about the collective structures that are breaking down in the role of that, and then we've espoused that we've espoused that the time is nigh for a deeper, higher connection. Do you call this, do you look at this as a collective and an individual awakening that's currently happening on the planet at this particular time?
Yes. It's the first time I could answer shorter answer than your longer question.
Perfect. So there is an awakening happening at this time. And can you facilitate our journey to developing our conversation with God? So I know there's a bit more than just a bit, but there's a formula that you've put together in God Talk for us to be able to build a relationship with talking with God. Because for some of us, like myself included, touchwood, prayer is a common sort of swing, like I'm connecting out and I'm talking to God, or maybe I'm connecting in and talking with God, however we want to look at it. And yet prayer's not quite it. Touchwood, can you expand and explain further?
Well, prayer is not quite it because prayer is one way. But a conversation with God is two-way. That is, we say something to God and God replies to us. And in a hundred different ways, God could reply to us with actual words, maybe the lyrics of the next song you hear on the radio, perhaps the chance conversation you happen to overhear at the coffee shop from the couple at the next table, or the coincidental meeting of a friend that you haven't seen in several months on the sidewalk, on the street, or in many, many other ways as well. The words on the next billboard as you're driving down the highway and turning the corner around, and the words just happen to provide a 12-word answer to the question that you've been mulling over for several weeks. So that God is communicating with us, as I said earlier, in many different ways across many different lifetimes. So the process that I developed is something that I gave a lot of thought to when I was invited to write this book. Most authors, when they have a book in mind, they write the book, then they try to find a publisher. And that was the case of my first books as well, of course. I wrote a book and then I looked to see if I could find some company that wanted to publish it. But in this case, for the first time in my life, really, the phone rang and it was a publisher calling me. It's never happened before. The publisher said, Neil, would you be willing to write a book for us? I said, what did you have in mind? They said, well, you know, many people have been wondering if it's really true that you have conversations with God. And if you do, can we all have such conversations? Or is it just you? And if we can all have such conversations, what would it take? How do you do it? Can you give us some clues? I said, well, let me think about it and see if I can't come up with something. And I came up with, you know, as I looked at my own experience, what turned out to be kind of like a six-step process of how we could have our own conversation with God. But I can't tell you those six steps until you ask me to. Because I never go on and on and on and on, because I have to have answers that are shorter than your questions.
That is, well, luckily, I'm not very good at asking concise questions.
Good. Go on and on and on and on.
And if I had it my way, honestly, we would just go on and on. This podcast would go on and on and on. I love your sharings. And one of the things that was present for me as you were sharing, like, you know, the ways God speaks to us. I remember from conversations with God, for me personally, there was such a profound shift in awareness that, you know, words was one of, it's probably not articulated this way, but my takeaway was God, words is like one of the, I don't say least preferred, but it's down the line from God's most accessible way to dialogue with you. Like emotions is so much higher on his, and energy is so much higher on his preferential list for like having that dialogue with you. Words are kind of like tertiary, whereas like emotion might be primary or secondary to like feel into the emotions.
Well, I was told, in fact, I was told precisely in conversations with God, Neil, words are the least reliable form of communication.
Yeah.
Because they can be misunderstood.
Especially through the ages. Sorry to interrupt.
Yes, precisely. Not just through the ages, but in different cultures, different languages, different age groups, in for many, many reasons. Words can be misunderstood. But feelings are the language of the soul. And feelings are not misunderstood. You and I can have a difficult time explaining something to each other, but when we both feel love or anger, negative or positive emotions, we will know it, and we don't have to have anybody explain it to us, explain what we're feeling. So I've tried to use the tool of language to create a six-step formula that could allow people to perhaps move closer to the possibility of having their own two-way interaction with the divine. But I can't tell you about that formula unless you ask me.
I'm going to ask you. So please take your time and explore the formula to speak with God. Unveil it for us, please. Touch wood. Here we go.
Funny you should ask me that question. I'm so surprised by your inquiry. But let me tell you the six-step process. The first step of the six steps is what I call possibility. We must agree that it's possible. That means, first of all, we have to agree that there even is a God, that there even is a higher power. And second part of that first step, that not only is there a God, but that God, in fact, talks to human beings. That takes us to step number two, which I call worthiness. You know, what's interesting, Amrit, is that most people who believe in God agree that God does talk to human beings. We all say, you know, there's a whole culture built around the fact that God supposedly talked to a man named Moses, who came down from the mountaintop and shared with his people, what God said to him. There's a whole culture built around the idea that God talked directly to a person named Jesus, and that, you know, Jesus has shared what he understood God to be saying through him to everyone who walked with him through his life. There's a whole culture built around the idea that the divine has revealed itself through a man named Muhammad. And Muhammad then wound up sharing what he understood with others around him who wrote it down in books. And that book has been read, called one of our holy scriptures. And this list could go on, by the way, not just men, but women as well. So we seem to have an agreement that, yes, God does talk directly to human beings. But as you mentioned earlier, unless we're one of those special sacred people, maybe even in today's culture, God might talk to the Pope, perhaps, or, you know, the chief ulama, or the head rabbi, you know, or a priest, or, you know, somebody with some kind of credential, if you please. But would God talk to, you know, an average person? The answer is we have to accept that we are worthy for God to talk even to us. That's why I said the second step is worthiness. Because if you don't think that you're worthy for God to speak to you, then of course you can't have a conversation with God. But if God would not speak to those who do not think they are worthy, then to whom would God speak? Of course, God would speak perhaps most loudly to those who need emotional, spiritual, and physical healing.
All right, guys, just a quick sec. So your conversation with God, have you had conversations with God? Are you opening up to the concept of conversations with God? What's your awareness around your personal conversations with God? I'd love to hear from you in the show notes below. Leave me a comment. That's me writing back to you, back to the episode.
So when we decide that we are worthy, we've taken the second major step. Then we move to step three in the process, which is willingness. We have to be willing to receive communication directly from God. And that's not a small step. Because as you mentioned yourself earlier, Amrit, there's such a cultural bias against the idea. People, if we tell people, yeah, God talked to me this morning, most people will say, what are you out of your mind?
Yeah, the craziness. What's the matter with you? The craziness factor was one of the questions I was going to ask you about today. Like, how do you know you're not or you are crazy when you're getting a response?
Yeah. It's not only people who might think that we're crazy, but actually religions. By the way, there are 4,223 religions now being practiced on the planet, in case you didn't know. And I didn't make that number up. You can Google it. Just ask the Google search engine how many religions are currently being practiced on the earth. 4,223 as of this day. Now, many of those religions tell us that if we dare to suggest that God is talking to me, much less through me, I am in fact a blasphemer. I am in fact an apostate. I'm committing heresy. And Amrit, in some cultures, that can be punishable by death. That's called an ecclesiastical sin. That's punishable in some cultures by death. So we have to be willing to stand up against the cultural bias of humanity and to say, I know you're going to call it crazy. I know you may even call it a blaspheme, but I'm here to tell you that I have experienced an intervention in my life by the divine. Which brings us to step number four, wakefulness. If we are imagining that God exists, that we are worthy to receive communication, and that we are willing to brave the consequences, then we must be wakeful. We must be wide awake to these experiences, or we'll miss them. They'll be right in front of our face, and they'll go in one ear and out the other, or right past us, and we won't even see them for what they are. So we have to, as I like to say, stay awake. Don't be asleep at the wheel. Which takes us to step number five, which is acceptance. Once we are awake to the messages that we are receiving from the divine, we have to accept them for what they are and not reject them by simply saying, it's just a coincidence. And, it was just a happenstance. Or, it's my imagination. It's just my imagination. I'm making it all up. So we call it something and we call it everything else. And we don't even accept it for what it really is. We need to diminish it or dismiss it. Worse yet, either diminish it or dismiss it and not even pay attention to it. So that's a very important step, number five, is to accept the communication when it occurs and call it what it is and then do something about it. Don't ignore it. Which takes us to step number six, which is discernment. We need to develop the ability to discern, or if you please, tell the difference between communications from the divine and the kinds of incoming data that's part of our lives these days, especially these days with the internet. We can't even walk away from our phones anymore. Years ago, we could at least leave the house and leave the telephone at home. These days, if you're not carrying a phone in your hand, people think there's something wrong with you. And if you don't answer their text immediately, they want to know why. So we have to then discern what is the difference between messages from the divine and messages that we're receiving from all sorts of sources in the social media and television, news magazines, and 100 other sources that we are assailed by in daily life. So not everything is a communication from God, and we have to be very careful that we don't start getting into a mindset that says, it's a sign. It's a sign. It was a sign. The other day I reached into my pocket to get my car keys out of my pocket, and I accidentally pulled out a $5 bill at the same time I pulled the car keys out, and the $5 bill landed on the ground. And I said to everybody around me, it's a sign. We're all supposed to take all the folding money out of our pocket and throw it on the ground right away. It's a sign from the divine. Take the folding money out of your pocket and throw it on the ground. Or maybe it wasn't a sign. Maybe it was just a simple incident. Maybe it was simply an accident. So we have to get to a place where we can discern the difference between actual communications with and from the divine and other kinds of experiences that we're moving through in our lives. So those are the six steps: possibility, worthiness, willingness, wakefulness, acceptance, and discernment. I explain them in even greater detail in the book itself to help people move through each of those six steps on their way to having their own conversation with God.
Hey, your Inspired Tribe. I want to take a quick sec, but I wanted to share something today with you that is really dear to my heart. And it's actually what keeps the entire ecosystem around the Inspired Evolution thriving, my one-on-one coaching. So it's basically coaching that helps you live a spiritually aligned life. I coach people from all different types of walks of life. These people are leaders and they're looking to have an incredible spiritual impact in the lives that they're leading for themselves, and then also lead in alignment to their values. Now, you don't have to take my word for it.
Here's a few people that have also transformed through my coaching, and here's what they have to say.
Amrit is a fantastic coach.
In a few sessions, he got to a depth that I'd only experienced before working with certain medicines.
He's gone through a lot of the struggles that you're probably facing.
Then my corporate banking job wasn't really doing it.
You feel like you're not making progress towards your goals.
And Amrit's been a really strong, supportive figure in my journey.
I'm more in control of myself.
I'm kinder to myself.
I actually have that vision and a purpose.
I do feel like I'm a better version of myself already.
Amazing energy.
He was easy to talk to, which made me easy to trust him.
Working with Amrit at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and really I was bouncing out of bed.
Whenever I get off the calls with Amrit, best money we've ever spent.
I would not recommend him because I don't want everyone to know about him, and then I won't be able to book him. If he gets too busy, I won't get my turn.
I would say absolutely.
There's no way you can work with Amrit for a period of time without being transformed.
So if you're considering him as a coach, do not hesitate, because you won't be disappointed.
As you guys can see, there's a lot of people all over the world from all these different corners experiencing incredible transformations. I don't think, if I can say humbly myself, that there is anything quite like this somewhere else online. Most people that, you know, have channels that, you know, grow and grow and grow don't really focus on one-to-one offerings. I have just found that it is the most profound space where you can bring yourself in a private container and really just share what's going on for yourself. And if you want to book in for that call with me, touch base, it's www.amrit.coach/life. That's www.amrit.coach/life. There is a link in the show notes below to book in that call. And yeah, if you want to take your journey further, if you want to dive in deeper and you really want to live a spiritually aligned life, if it's for you, please do check it out. And without too much further ado, once again, for your spirit, for yourself, today's podcast. I know it's not quite like this, but like, just for the sake of painting a picture and being able to ask the question clearly, is it almost seems like, let's say the higher power's up here, or God's up here, and I know there's no, the up is fraught with biases, but nonetheless, for the moment, let's say God's up here. It seems a lot like the formula to connect in is largely about receptivity. Possibility, that it is possible, opening us up, worthiness, that actually, I can connect, and then the willingness, like, I do want to connect, and then wakefulness, staying awake to the messages that are coming through, and then acceptance that, yep, this is my message that got through, and then discerning that, like, not to over-obsess on everything as being a message, but, you know, that there are certain poignant messages that are coming through at the times that they are. So all of that to say, it feels like from the formula that God is actually always talking to us. The current is actually always pouring down. It's more about us actually opening up and connecting to the current of conversation. Is that a fair assumption? Is that, what am I drawing there? Am I drawing a safe conclusion?
It's, in my opinion, Amrit, it's precisely accurate. I would only change a couple of the words you used. I think that God exists inside of all of us. I think that each of us is an individuation of the divine. So I don't really quite see, as you said, when you mentioned it, it's fraught with challenges. I don't see that God is not like rain that's falling down on us. But God is like, an energetic that is rising within us and bringing us an awareness that already exists within us, but that we simply may not be currently remembering. So that the process of communication from the divine is a process of that which is the divine wisdom, clarity, understanding, awareness arising within us. That's why it's called consciousness raising. In some cultures, it's called consciousness raising. It's not called consciousness downloading. It's called consciousness raising from within us. But when we raise our consciousness from within us, we suddenly find ourselves thinking, acting, being, and even speaking in ways that we might not ever previously and imagine that we would. You know, when I'm in front of an audience, Amrit, I often ask a question. I say to the audience, raise your hand if you've ever had the experience of someone coming to you really needing some advice. It's, you know, maybe a friend or a family member, perhaps a child or a brother or somebody coming to you who really, really needed important advice. Mm. And you've had the experience of not really knowing exactly what you were going to say at the outset, but then even surprising yourself with what you've had to offer to that other person in that moment. How many of you have ever had that experience of giving some of the best advice you ever heard from yourself to another, out of the blue, as it were? And Amrit, 95% of the hands in the audience go up. That is, all but 5% of the people in the audience have said they've had that experience. I say, so I see.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
You already know what is true in many ways about life, and you know it well enough to give advice to other people, but you simply don't know that you know all the time. Amrit, there are those who know, but don't know that they know. They're like children. Encourage them. Then there are those who know, but they think they don't know. They need help in motivating them to accept their own inner wisdom. Then there are those who don't know, but think that they know. They are dangerous. Avoid them. Then there are those who know, but have forgotten that they know. Remind them. And then there are those who know and who know that they know. These are the cognoscenti, those who know. But do not follow them, because if they know that they know, they would not have you follow them, but lead you to the wisdom inside of yourself. Even as one of the great masters in world history, a guy who walked around here on this planet around 2,000 years ago or so, and he had people who saw the level of mastery at which he was functioning, and they followed him around. They were called his followers. And they were amazed at the things he was saying and doing. And he turned to them more than once and said, and he's quoted as saying this, Why are you so amazed? These things and more shall you do also. I could, of course, be wrong about all of this. I don't think so.
Profound. Winding back into the steps for a moment, the first step requires us to have a firm belief in the divine. When you mentioned possibility, accepting the possibility that God exists, possibility makes it sound like maybe I could consider that something exists and my connection might be possible. But how firmly does one need to believe in the divine for there to actually be a really robust initial connection?
I think it must be a firm belief, or the connection would be written off as imagination. So you don't have to have a firm belief to have the connection, but you do have to have a firm belief to call the connection exactly what it is. Otherwise, you may write it off and say, yeah, it's just my imagination. I'm making it all up. And people have done that. I speak from experience, because when I first began having this encounter, I thought I was making it all up.
Mm.
Until I was told some things that were so, frankly, just between us, so profound that I realized I couldn't have made that up. I never would have in a million years made up something like that. So as the messages became more and more profound, I became more and more clear. Oh, I'm not making this up. This is not my imagination. This is actually happening.
Mm. The second point about worthiness is actually quite an entire body of work unto itself, because sometimes many of us struggle with worthiness, especially when we start unpacking ourselves in a therapeutic sense and digging deeper into childhood work and all our healing. And there can be so many blockages in that space towards, well, I'm worthy for God to, because I think as we're having this conversation, for most people it'll be like, oh yeah, worthiness, like it's an important step, and oh yeah, I think I would consider myself worthy. But I found, you know, I've done an amount of work, touch wood, on self-worth, and going through the experience of trying to connect, I remember going, oh, but surely, like, I'm just humble old me, like God's probably a bit too busy to talk to me. You know, like, and I saw that thought pattern emerge, and I was like, oh, the worthiness thing is a total thing. Like, it's there's a whole body of work in there in terms of finding ourselves actually worthy at step two.
When we realize that God is not talking to me, but that God is within me, that each of us is an individuation of the divine, then we don't have to think in terms of, am I worthy enough to be spoken to by God? But simply, am I worthy enough to experience the presence of divinity within me, placed by God in every sentient being in the cosmos? And then from that place of knowing that deep down inside of me is divine wisdom, divine clarity, divine understanding, divinity itself, including divine love. When I'm clear about that, I can call it forth. Not call on it to come to me, but call it forth to come through me.
Is the divine within us? I'm going to use the word yearning kind of loosely, yearning for us to finally come home, to recognize and look at it and find ourselves worthy enough to be able to connect to it.
I think it's God's desire. I don't think that God yearns in the sense that we use the word, because there is nothing that God wants or needs in order to be happy. But I think that God has a desire, and that God's desire is for every sentient being in the cosmos to self-realize. And it's God's greatest desire for all of life to be a demonstration of itself.
In step three, you talk about willingness, and I think the necessary conditions for providing willingness is a great step to dive into the book. Step four, you talk about wakefulness. And I think we run the risk a little bit, and I think step six is really helpful because it helps us recognize the discernment piece to not over-label everything as, you know, this divine, everything is divine, but, you know, not everything is a message, like you said, at all times. But the wakefulness can be kind of misconstrued as constant vigilance in that way. And one of the sort of things I found you saying was attentive in attention, and the unexpected expectation, active in activity, these kind of somewhat polarity-based sort of holdings of state. Can you describe a little bit around, yeah, just the wakefulness and how it's not really constant vigilance, which can be quite a, like an on-buzzy kind of frequency? Can you describe constant wakefulness a little bit further?
Well, you're doing a good job, actually, Albert, of describing what it is not, what wakefulness is not. I agree with you that wakefulness is not constant vigilance. In fact, that level of constant vigilance can often block us and stop us from receiving the information that exists within us, because we're so vigilant and we want to make sure we don't miss a single thing. We're paying so much attention to it. It's like, you know what? For me, the analogy that I use is cooking. I happen to enjoy being in the kitchen. I'm a pretty handy guy around the stove, as it happens in my life. It's been something that I've enjoyed doing. But when I'm trying to make something very special, if I'm so vigilant about every single ingredient, no, not 3/4 of a cup, only 2/3, no, not a teaspoon, half a teaspoon. No, be careful, oh, too much salt, you put too much salt in. If I get so vigilant about every single aspect of what I'm doing when I'm making that special meal for my family, I ruin the meal because I'm paying too much attention. So if we pay too much attention, then we are at tension. That's why the world is called attention. We are attention. We are literally at tension. And so I suggest that we don't pay so much attention that we turn what could be a calming, joyful experience into an experience of tension. Therefore, wakefulness does not mean constant vigilance. It means simply decide that you're not going to miss the obvious. But stay awake. You know, like driving down the highway. Pay attention. Stay awake, but don't be so vigilant that you miss the stop sign.
Thank you for clarifying that. There's a question that emerged for me around hearing God's voice and discerning that from our own personal intuition. Some of us may have a relationship with our intuition. Are they one and the same? Are they different? What is the difference? What is the similarities? Where does intuition lie in and around God talk?
I think intuition can be a demonstration of divine intervention. But I think it would be a mistake for us to assume that every single solitary experience of intuition is, you know, what I'm calling in my world a conversation with God. It's like I mentioned something about that earlier. So, you know, I pay attention to my intuition and almost always follow it. But if my intuition somehow is bringing me some kind of negative energetic, I rarely pay attention to that. Because conversations with God, in my experience, are never negative, but always positive and healing and opening us to our awareness, not opening us to our fear.
I think that's really important to be aware of. Thank you. And you also mentioned just a couple of moments ago this deep knowing. And it's been a deep fascination of mine, this deep knowing, because as a coach for helping people live spiritually aligned lives, many people come to coaching and they can't really articulate why they know a certain thing, but deeper than their bones, they tend to know that they're meant to do such and such, or they're meant to experience such and such in their lifetime. And there's this quality of deep knowing that I've come to learn runs deeper than intuition in my humble awareness perspective of things. And I heard you use the term just before as well. Can you just share a little bit around your awareness of this deep knowing, as you called it, as well?
Well, I echo your own experience, Amrit. I think I agree with you. All I can do now is say basically what you said in different words. I think that people do frequently experience a level of knowing that defies logic, defies previous experience. They can't say, oh, I know this because it happened before. It may be something that's never happened ever in their lives. It may be something about which they literally have no knowledge, but they have a knowing deep in their, as you say, deep in their bones, deep in their body, deep in their self about something. I hate to use such a trite example, but I'm going to use it to make a point. When my wife walked into the room for the very first time as a strange lady that I didn't ever have any awareness of, she was brought to my home by a friend. We were having an evening gathering at my house. I invited my friends and told them, you know, bring along anybody you think might enjoy joining us for an evening of fun at my house. It was a kind of a family gathering. So in the larger sense of a universal family of friends. So this guy came over with his girlfriend. I took one look at her and I had a deep knowing. Uh-oh, I'm in trouble here.
I would ask you to keep a PG from this point. Sorry.
And what's interesting is, what's fascinating is that later on in our friendship, she told me she had the exact same feeling.
Wow.
Here she's brought to my home by another guy, but she said that she took a look at me. She didn't have a committed relationship with the other guy. They weren't married or engaged or anything. They were just pals, palling around. But she still was with him. She felt a little bit strange that she's becoming with him, and suddenly felt upon first sight that she knew we were supposed to be together. And we discussed it later. We talked about how that happened, how we both felt that way. Neither one of us, of course, said anything to the other. We didn't jump out of our chair and say, oh, my God. But we both felt it strongly, and we followed that energetic and found our way to each other without hurting anybody else in the process. We simply found our way to each other. And after knowing each other for a week, we were together, you know, as friends, really, I would say close, intimate friends. We had become intimate, but we only knew each other for a week. And we were off to a play. We were going to see a play. I invited her to see a show that I thought she might enjoy seeing. And so we were driving there. We had dinner. We were going to go to dinner and a show. In the car on the way to the theater, she just turned to me from the passenger seat and said, "I think we should be married."
She proposed to you.
And I looked at her and I said, "You don't want to say that to me twice." She said, "No, I'm serious. I think we should be married. We like the same food. We like the same music. We like the same kind of theater. We like the same books. You know, we're good together intimately. Everything works out. We have the same philosophy. We have the same ideas. I think we should be married."
In only a week's time, than being physically together, yeah.
And I looked at her and I put my hand across the front seat of the car and I said, "Done." And shook her hand. And we flew off to Las Vegas 2 days later, where you can get a marriage license with no waiting period. Went to a wedding chapel. And came out as man and wife. That was 16 years ago. And I was not a young man. I was 63 years old. I remember my age specifically because I used to sing to her the Beatles song, "Will You Love Me When I'm 64?
She so unequivocally said yes, by the way, for those tuning in.
So there's such a thing as a deep knowing. And when I have that kind of a deep knowing, I have that same deep knowing, by the way, about God. I believe, A, that God exists. B, that God talks to all of us all the time from within each of us by causing us to get in touch with our own deepest wisdom, the wisdom within. And I have a deep knowing that when I leave this particular incarnation, I will return to God. And I'll return to my heavenly home, to all of our heavenly home. And I'm only hoping that I've lived my life in such a way that God will say, "Well, well done, good and faithful servant. Well done." There is no such place as hell. Damnation does not exist in the afterlife. Despite the proclamations of most of the world's 4,000 religions, or 2,000, or whatever there is. But I believe that we are all invited to continue the journey of the soul, lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, in a process that I loosely call evolution. And then at some point, we evolve to the level where we return to physical life as what you and I would call a master. Moses, Muhammad, Buddha, Mother Mary, Mother Teresa, Julian of Norwich, Teresa of Avila, Joan of Arc. People who simply move through life in such a way that allows them to demonstrate who we all really are. I could, of course, be wrong about all of this. But I don't think so.
Well, it's deeper than you
think. I have a deep knowing.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's deeper than you're thinking, isn't it? Sorry. Yeah, please. Can I ask, before we wrap things up, the deep knowing, is it too much to say that is probably some of the most intimate expressions of God talking to us?
All expressions of God are intimate. There are no degrees of intimacy. Any more than there are degrees of uniqueness. This thing is either unique or it's not. I know people often say, well, it's really very unique. I say, well, wait a minute. There are no degrees of uniqueness. It's either unique or it isn't. There are no degrees of intimacy in terms of God's communications through us, from within us. So I would not use that terminology in terms of quantifying the degree of intimacy. I would say that all communications from God arises from my soul saying, into me, see. Hey God, here's my invitation. Into me, see. And God says the same thing to me. Kneel. Into me, see. And we simply pronounce it intimacy.
I'm processing that so deeply, I'm sure there should be a question that I should be asking at this point.
No, a good interviewer knows when he can't top what's just been said. You know, I did talk radio for years in my life.
Oh, really?
Did you know that?
No, I had no idea.
Oh, God, yeah. I had a nationally syndicated talk radio program. In the United States. Yes, I did.
How long ago was this? Sorry.
Well, I started my whole career in broadcasting when I was 19. So I spent 27 years in the broadcasting business as an on-air talent.
Wow.
And the last, 5 or 6 years of those years, I was an on-air talk show host, radio talk show host. And that was, I would say, 35, 40 years ago, just before my Conversations with God experience.
That is, I'm so glad I know that at the end of the episode and not at the beginning, because that would have just added a little bit of pressure, wouldn't it?
But one thing I learned as an interviewer is when the guest says something you can't top, just shut the hell up.
Or, yeah, thank you for that sage advice. I might have made a fool of myself by saying, I got nothing to say. Oh, wow. Neil, I've got a couple of quick rapid-fire questions to wrap up the podcast, just in, just to sort of, bring us everything into a close, if you would do us the honors. One of the questions is, what is your definition of living a good life?
Living a life that expresses the highest thought I ever had about myself in a way which never touches another negatively, that never causes hurt, damage, harm, or injury to another person, but that elevates both of us and all of us.
Thank you. Neil, your definition of God, please.
There is no definition. The attempt to define God would limit our experience of the divine, because the divine, by definition, is that which is unlimited. So how do you define the unlimited? other than to say that it is unlimited. But if I was forced to come up with something, I would say what I said in my most recent book, just prior to the book God Talk. My most recent book prior to that was a book called The God Solution.
The God Solution, yeah.
And in The God Solution, I offered a two-word definition of God. Pure love. And anyone who wants to know how to apply that in their life is welcome to receive a copy of my author's manuscript. I send an author's manuscript of the book Pure Love, the book called The God Solution, to anyone who asks me for it at no cost, no charge. All they have to do is write me an email to neil@neildonaldwalsh.com, and I'll send them the author's manuscript by return mail.
Wow, that's so generous.
Because I want everyone to really receive that information. Mm-hmm. So they can answer for themselves the question, who and what is God? And how can I experience the presence of the divine in and through my life?
I love that. And that was the theme of our last conversation as well. And I put a link to, we'll put Neil's email that he just referred in the show notes below, but also, and also the last conversation we had here on the Inspired Evolution podcast called The God Solution. Thank you, Neil. There also rapid fire question round still going. What is the ultimate purpose of life, in your opinion?
It's the same for, in my understanding, for every sentient being throughout the cosmos. To experience our true identity. To experience ourselves as individuations of divinity in ever increasing and larger ways through a process that I just described a minute ago called evolution. So if I could put it in one word, the purpose of life is to evolve, to become grander and grander expressions of who we really are, divinity itself.
So beautiful. I will put a link to God Talk and The God Solution below. The question normally is, how do people find you? But you are just one of the fingers on the hand in some way. And so we are all connected. But maybe one of the other fingers wants to bounce around and tap the other finger here in this reality. What is the best way for people to dive in deeper, per se? I'll put the link to the books in the show notes below. Anything else you'd espouse?
Anyone who wants to stay connected to the Conversations with God experience can simply write to cwgconnect.com. And there I have a platform called Ask Neil, where I interact with people on a daily basis.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. And I'll link that in the show notes in the description below. Neil, before I let you go, anything else, any stones left unturned in today's conversation? Anything else you'd like to share before I wrap it up?
I think we covered the waterfront. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you.
Neil, thank you so much. It has been such a pleasure. As always, you have been so generous with your wisdom, your time, your energy. And yeah, every time I leave these conversations, I leave purely inspired, ready to, you know, just really tap into just the wellspring of source of energy that is Creator, God, however we want to label that, and just really reigniting that deep connection that is ever present, and just in like asking for me to connect back into it. So I just, in many ways, for me, you are a sage. So thank you so much for the work that you're doing. And our conversation stands on all the work that you've continued to do throughout the decades and decades and decades of work that you've committed to all of this. I didn't know you were a radio host, but everything after Conversations with God, especially, but also all of the broadcasting as well. Neil, thank you so much for sharing yourself so abundantly here with us today. I really appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you for those kind words, Amrit. It was lovely to be here with you. Blessed be.
thank you so much for tuning in to this amazing episode of The Inspired Evolution. Without you, the Inspired Evolution tribe, this podcast would not be what it is today. Thank you so much for your love and your support. Thank you so much for being so inspired to evolve. It's truly inspiring. If you haven't already done so, please subscribe to The Inspired Evolution on YouTube, the home of The Inspired Evolution's video podcast. We release inspiring conversations such as this every week, along with guided meditations and empowering insights, all designed to help you grow and evolve. Honestly, your subscription on YouTube to the channel helps us out a great deal. And one of the other benefits, if you're having any insights or shifts from these episodes that you want to chat about, or if you'd like to leave myself or the guest a message, please do so in the comments on YouTube. I truly look forward to hearing from you. And as always, tribe, remember to stay inspired and keep evolving.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.